We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time. Welcome to In the Know. We are joined by a special guest today. His name is Kane Purnell. He's written some stuff on Bourbon Street Shots. You can probably find him on Twitter at Kane_Purnell, talking about various prospects who might make it to the NBA, as well as just talking about general scouting and scouting philosophies. And he's from Australia, and I'm going to let Kane say hello here. Kane, where in Australia are you and what time is it?
Sydney, and right now it's almost 8:30 in the morning.
Wow, 8:30 in the morning. And what's it like in Sydney right now for those of us who are completely unfamiliar with Australia? Sydney is in the southern hemisphere, so they're in opposite seasons from us. So is it gearing up to be cold right now? Is it cold?
Yeah, no, it's already cold. Like pretty cold in the mornings, like below 10 degrees, which is pretty cold here. Doesn't get to around like 20 during the day, really. That's Celsius, by the way.
There we go. I don't think most of us are going to be doing the math mentally here, but I'll save some people the trouble and just change the subject. But save me the trouble. But yeah, man, like how has watching the NBA been like for you in Australia, and what got you into all of this?
Usually it's pretty good to like be able to watch. Like the game's usually on, games usually start like 10, go to around 2-ish, like the East Coast games. So like, cause I'm at uni, I can still watch a few games like during the days, but if I'm at work, you know, I'll have to watch them later in the night. But what brought me to basketball originally was just NBA 2K, like back in, it was a few years ago now. And that's what made me decide to start following the Pelicans at first. It was the first game I played was the draft year where AD was number one. So I just decided to follow the team that had the number one pick in the draft. And yeah, stuck with them now.
That's I can't imagine picking a team based on the number one pick in the draft, and I feel like you're cursed in a way. So I do apologize for ending up with New Orleans, but that's a lot of fun. Any I guess since you've been following the team, any favorite moments, or I guess there's a lot of bad things that has happened. So again, sorry, but what's your favorite moment of the team since you've been really following them?
The sweep over Portland. Yeah, that was probably the best.
Yeah, I was just telling someone earlier today that the high point in the last like 2 or 3 years for me has been winning the lottery. And the emotions I felt there are probably the highest I've felt. And it's been on its way down ever since. This is kind of depressing, but when you have Zion Williamson on your team, but I don't know. Do you guys feel differently? Was that accurate for you guys as well?
Yeah, just everything feels pretty rushed, really, since we drafted Zion. I don't know. It just hasn't been that fun. Everything's been disappointing, rushed. We feel like it's win now mode when most other stars around the league, really, they've had a few more years than, well, it feels like they've had a few more years than just like 1.5 years, really.
Yeah. Do you feel like I feel like stars these days are now pushing back. I feel like the patient, okay, maybe you even get the duration of your rookie contract to fumble around. I feel like those days are gone, because if, you know, there was a lot of smoke around Trae Young last offseason, and he applied a lot of organizational pressure, and that was after 2 years, which is the same situation Zion's in now. He's, you know, he's 2 years in, is applying organizational pressure. I feel like you look at Luka, it's the same thing. They're making changes in that organization. They just, you know, got rid of their GM and their coach. New things are going to happen. I feel like you're starting to look across the league, and all of a sudden this patience that people once had is disappearing. Do you, Mason, do you feel like that's fair? And Kane, do you feel like that's fair?
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to say that too definitively, because I feel like in the era we're in right now, it does feel like there's a changing of the guards a little bit. And so teams feel like they've got a shot. Whereas like, I think in the height of we went from like a LeBron dynasty era to a Warriors dynasty era. And maybe there was just this feeling with some of the younger players that there was no shot, and like, you know, or maybe it was just personalities. I don't know. I don't know what it was, but now we're in this place where, you know, suddenly I think more teams feel like they really can make a move, and this year is evidence of that. But so it's, I think it's a combination of that and just players just and like exactly what you said, you know, player empowerment, making your presence known, and making, you know, you making the team sure you make them know you want to win.
Yeah, I think a big part of it is a lot of teams are realizing there's a very small window to actually win. Like, so at Toronto, they went all out to get Kawhi. Well, not all out, but they went and got Kawhi for that 1 year. They got him a championship. I mean, it's very small window to actually make a proper push. So I think we're going to be seeing that a lot more as well.
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. But so I think, you know, speaking of windows, speaking of these young guys who are now, I guess, becoming more, I don't want to say, I don't want to blame them, right? Because you come into the NBA, you want to win, and if you have the power, you're flexing it. Good for them, right? So I don't want to paint them off as like these impatient people, but you know they're flexing their power. But speaking of those people, we brought you in to discuss the draft because one, you're really passionate about the draft, and that's really your, you know, I feel like that's something you're really passionate about. So what I wanted to ask you is, how do you feel about this upcoming draft, and how would you compare it in terms of historical drafts? People say, oh, this is a really deep draft. Is that because of the stars that are on the top of it? Is that because of the people that can be found down the draft? Like, where are you at with this draft and the overall strength of it?
Yeah, so I don't think it's as deep as everyone says. Like, everyone's saying, you know, you get starters and towards the second round. Like, you probably won't. Just like looking at it historically, I mean, it will be historical if that happens, but it just probably won't happen. But towards the top, I mean, it's a pretty clear like 2 and 2 tier group. So, well, at least for me, I've got Cade, then Mobley, and then I've got Green and Suggs. And then after that, there's a decent group where you could just pair them all together to probably from about 5 to maybe 16, 18, 20. I mean, a lot of those guys are similar. Although it's going to come down to what team they land on, who develops. But after that, there is a few guys I do like. But most of those guys, they're going to all depend on fit as well. I mean, it's not going to be historically deep. there'll be guys that have a shot, but I think that's just like every year, really.
Got it. So that's helpful, because I think that it is kind of, it's tough every year. Once you get past the top, it feels like every year you hear who the main guys are. And then after that, there's a lot of shuffling around. Is there a guy that, or is there anyone in that second, or that's so that not that's, I guess the third tier. So below the top four, is there a guy that you especially like, and whether that's a group of 10 to 16 players, you said, that can really fall in that range. Is there someone else you feel like is maybe, not getting the credit they deserve and should be, in consideration for the fifth pick?
Not really. I think like there's a few top tier, like the guys at the top of that tier, like Kuminga, Scotty Barnes, but like there's plenty of flaws with all these players. So like I can definitely see like the mainstream boards, they're pretty much, Kuminga, Barnes, like Davion Mitchell. But personally, I like a lot of other guys, Franz Wagner, Jaden Springer. I kind of like Keon Johnson. So if someone did have Giddy as well, I'll throw him in there. There's a lot of guys like that. If you put them up there, I'm not going to have any arguments really, but I just prefer my other guys.
So it seems like when it comes to historical drafts, the bell curve of this is going to be similar to drafts in the past, which is not that surprising, because I feel like people talk about, oh, this draft is going to be amazing. This draft's going to be amazing. And frankly, when you look upon things retrospectively, that's kind of like it falls within a relative normal distribution of outcomes. And that being said, you mentioned that situationally things matter for the prospect and it kind of where they end up. And, one of my big things is I don't like drafting for fit, especially as high as, when you have the 10th pick. When you look at the Pelicans and kind of what their roster is made of and kind of what you maybe hope their roster turns into, right? Not necessarily where it's at in its current form. Who are some guys, who's a handful of players that you may be thinking like, okay, at 10, I'd be excited to pick them. Not that like, oh, I'm not going to argue against it. Be like, no, I'd be happy with this guy at 10.
Probably Franz Wagner is probably my guy at 10. Big wing, 6'9", good defender. He covers everything defensively. As a shooter on the offensive end, he didn't shoot that great this year, but going through his junior years, every year it's like he's been around the scene since like 2016 internationally. He's always been referred to as a shooter. Like he's going to shoot, I believe. So he's been my number one guy. I think there's always a role for big wings in the league as well.
Do you feel like he has star equity, or like what's his outcome? You feel like his 95th percentile outcome? And then like, what do you think his floor is?
So the star outcome, maybe a 1-2-time all-star. I know that's not really what you want to be picking in the lottery, but if you get something in the upper levels of that outcome, you're getting an elite role player off the catch. He can, attack closeouts, shoots, defends at a high level defensively. It's not going to be an all-star player. You might want to shoot for an all-star level player, which you probably won't get, but you can definitely try. Like I'm all for shooting for upside. I just want to be somewhat realistic with the guys that are still going to be available at 10. And then as far as his floor goes, he's probably not an NBA player at his floor. Just being realistic again. He's a great defender, but on the offensive end, there's probably some questions. What does he actually do if he doesn't shoot? The answer is probably not much.
If you were trying to grab a guy at 10 or who you think could be available there, where you're doing is saying who's the best chance to really to be a star, and even the bust potential is huge. Is there a guy that you feel like is a real big boom bust type risk reward, or is that really not realistic in your mind?
I probably say about Keon Johnson. So from Tennessee, he's set the all-time max vert record at the combine, 48 inches. So he will be a good defender coming in. So he will have that going for him. But on offense, he's raw. He can basically, he's only shown flashes of things. He's shown some passing, like he mainly attacks in transition. You know, he's a like pretty bad shooter. Like, but from mid range, he's shown some shot making ability, shown some all flashes of stuff. I mean, if he puts it together, you're probably looking at, you know, an all-star guy, but it probably won't happen.
So my pushback is, is this one of those situations where we look at a guy like, okay, well, he has all the physical tools. He has, you know, he has the vert, he has the lateral speed, he has the quickness. And then there's a lot of basketball tools and basketball layers we got to add to this person for him to reach a star outcome. Do you feel like teams overvalue that in a sense, whereas you may have someone who's less explosive, but way more skilled and way more, you know, he knows how to play basketball at a higher level. Do you feel like those players are underrated? One and two, you know, is that, I guess, is Wagner one of those type of players, or do you have others in mind that at 10 who could potentially, you know, step in, be contributors, but also have the star upside just because of like the ridiculous amount of skill they have?
Yeah, I definitely think skilled players get underrated. You go look at the top guys in the draft, like Jalen Green's is a crazy athlete. I mean, Cade Cunningham's not a crazy athlete, but he's a 6'8" guy, a point guard who shoots 40% from three. Evan Mobley's a crazy athlete, physical tools. Jalen Suggs, pretty good athlete again. But then those guys deserve to be at the top. So when you go down, you're still getting teams that, based on the mock drafts, are looking for athleticism. And I do think teams do overrate that because, I mean, if you do want a star player, the easiest path for them really to get there is to be a great athlete and then have the skills. But yeah, a lot of players don't have the athleticism but still have the skills. And that's probably not, you're not probably not getting a, you know, 6-time all-star from a, an athletic guy, but you can probably get, you know, a 2-time all-star maybe. I mean, that's still a great outcome if you're picking at 10. And some guys like that are Jaden Springer, so Cam Johnson's teammate at Tennessee. He's one of the youngest players in the draft, but he also is incredibly skilled, which is, I'm a big fan of him.
The two players I was looking at when in terms of skills, one, you know, your fellow countryman, Josh Giddey. And do you feel like he will be there at 10, or are you like confident that, okay, like some team's probably going to snatch him up, but what can you talk about a little bit of his upside and what maybe his, I guess, fully formed version looks like in the NBA, because the skill appeal is pretty enticing in my opinion at his size. And then obviously Pelicans fan favorite is Corey Kispert, right? His calling card is shooting, and he's a really probably the best shooter in his class, especially, you know, he can pull up, he can do it off the move, he can do it off screens. So he's a pretty versatile shooter. But yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on those two players.
Yeah, so Giddey, I've seen for a few years now, he was a late bloomer. So he was pretty small, or not small, but undersized compared to what he is now. He's grown, he's added the skill. He's a great passer, probably the best passer in the draft when you consider his height as well. The issue for me with Giddey is his scoring. So as a 6'8 guy, 6'9, if you know, around that, he doesn't really shoot the ball at a great percentage. He will attempt them. He's picked up his percentage, but his form, he needs a lot of work. If you can get him there to shoot the ball, then yeah, he'll be great. But there's some pretty big concerns about his shooting for me. Yeah, as a playmaker though, if I don't really know what he will look like, because you're looking at a 6'8 guy who's not that athletic. He's not that athletic, but he's a great playmaker getting downhill off screens. So I don't know, you don't really want that guy running your offense, but do you play him alongside other great playmakers, and then you've just got an abundance of playmaking out there. It's not really a bad situation at all. And then Kispert, so he's, yeah, like you said, one of the best shooters. I think everyone on Twitter just the Pelicans have Zion, so give him shooting. He is a great shooter. He's one of the older prospects. I'm not really a fan of drafting older prospects, but, you know, he is a great shooter. He'll play a role. I could definitely see him working out. Yeah.
Got it. So I guess like another question would be, any thoughts around if the Pelicans were to trade? I mean, I think it might be a stretch to say the Pelicans are going to look to trade up, but if we, if the Pelicans were to trade back, is that something, a move you would be a fan of? And if so, I mean, I know it's circumstantial depending on what's the return, but any guys that really you think are going to be undervalued who might be good value if you trade back in the draft?
Yeah, so trade back, it's an interesting idea. I think the main value you get when you trade back is if you identify a tier group of players that you like, they'll have similar outcomes, but they do have different values according to their draft capital where you pick them on the board. So 10, if you say there's guys back to 16 that are in a similar group, the players you like, then trade back, grab a guy you think's pretty similar value, and you can pick up some more, another pick, or, you know, might be a dump a contract, something like that. So there's value to be had in that. There's some guys that, you know, you could look for back there. JT Thor, he's really rising up draft boards. Trey Murphy, 3 and D.
Assume we know nothing about these. I mean, I know about these guys. Assume Mason knows nothing about these guys.
Fair assumption, by the way. Go ahead.
Assume Mason knows nothing about these guys. Who is JT Thor and what does he do? And then obviously, who is Trey Murphy and what does he do?
Okay, yeah. So JT Thor played for Auburn. 6'8 guy. His measurables are really similar to Paul Reed from Philadelphia. Defensively, you know, he's, you know, great defender. All the physical tools. And then offensively, that's where everyone will love the flashes. So, you know, he'll have some step back threes that are just like, how's a guy his size making these off the dribble? But it's really flashes with him. But he is one of the youngest players in the draft. So it turns out they actually got his birth year wrong. So he's actually born in 2002. So he's like younger than some of the international guys, which is pretty crazy. And then Trey Murphy, he's a 3-and-D guy from Virginia. Defensively, he was in the Virginia system. There's some questions about how that translates to the NBA, but then on the offensive end though, he's, you know, a great 3-point shooter.
So when it comes to, again, like one of the you talked about identifying a particular group of players with maybe similar outcomes, when it comes to specific skill sets, are there skill sets in mind that you prioritize higher when it comes to the draft? Or are you looking more holistically at the player and their ceiling? And are there skill sets you would prioritize higher specifically with regards to the Pelicans? So I ask this because, you know, I'm looking at the playoffs, I look at the value of shot making, and what you're seeing is guys who can dribble, pass, and shoot. And you're seeing the guys who are at the top tier of that basically become unguardable because of their pull-up shooting. So how do you feel about the pull-up shooters in this class that, you know, would either be available at 10 or maybe are available down the draft? Who would you consider to be some of the better ones? And do you feel like the Pelicans should maybe rearrange where they're selecting on the board to nab some of them?
Yeah, so self-creation and like is pretty key right now, as you said. As far as pull-up shooting goes, you have to be pretty select with the players that you do choose to believe in as pull-up shooters. A lot of self-creation at the college level can just be inefficient, like chucking the ball up. That's not really going to translate to the NBA unless you do it at a really high level. You can take a gamble on those guys and just hope they work out, but it's not really something you want to be spending a ton of draft capital on. As far as the best pull-up shooters go, I think Max Asmus, he went on that crazy run in March Madness. He's actually measured out to be 5'10 and a half. So he's one of the better pull-up shooters in the draft, but I just don't see how a player that small can be effective. But then other pull-up shooters. So I'm completely blinking right now.
Bones Highland, Trey Mann.
Yes. Yes.
How do you feel about, do you feel, so I like Bones a lot, and he looks like he's been doing well in the combine. People say he might be moving on to the first round. Do you see Bones translating? And if you had to kind of rank, you know, someone like Bones with Trey Mann out of Florida, do you have a preference on the guys?
Yeah, I like Bones as well. First round grade, that seems pretty accurate right now. I mean, scouts are saying that he's moving up to there, but I'm sure a lot of guys already have him there. In the NBA, you know, he's shooting NBA range threes already, like pull up NBA range threes in college. I'm sure there's going to be no questions about that translating over. He has the height to basically play on the ball. I think he's around 6'3". I'm not sure on that. As far as him and Trey Mann go, I do prefer Bones. I do like Mann as well. I just have some more questions about Mann, about actually having the athleticism and burst to play with the ball in his hands and actually to be able to create those pull-up opportunities.
I think that's totally fair. I know Mason is very intimately familiar with these prospects, so he was dying to know where you stood on him as well. Sorry, Mason.
All good.
Sorry. No.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Oh, but so I think what we're getting in is we're getting in kind of the weeds of this draft a little bit. And I like that because the Pelicans have a million second round picks. Well, they have four to be specific. With regards to the second round, I think, you know, the hit rate is so little or so small in the second round for across the league. You have to kind of rearrange your philosophy when it comes to drafting people. What is your philosophy in the second round, and are there players you're keen on, especially with regards to the Pelicans?
Yes, in the second round, I tend to have a similar approach. I mean, if you like a guy in the second round, I usually like to target international guys that you can think in a couple of years, you know, if you stash them, they could return first round value. I think it's, you see it pretty often, like teams stashing players. We did it with Didi. But I still also like targeting a guy you think will have a solid chance as an NBA player. I don't know how you, I don't actually know how I prefer to, which players I prefer. Like if you get an early second round pick, I think I'd probably prefer the NBA chance over the stash guy. But if you have like a real high potential second round pick and you're just seeing other teams just missing something with him, you probably just have to go get that guy. I mean, second round picks towards the top, sure, they're kind of valuable, but they do lose value pretty quickly as you go down the second round. Some second round guys. So I do a lot of international scouting, and there are a few guys that I really like in this international class when it does start getting down to the second rounds. So I'm sure there's definitely going to be some opportunities if we do keep the picks, because it's probably pretty likely that we do trade a fair few of these picks if we even make a pick at all. But Rokas Jokubaitis, his Lithuanian 6'4 point guard. Sorry, I just got the Woj notification.
What did Woj say? Who got traded?
Jason Kidd.
No, Jason Kidd.
Jason Kidd. I knew it. I knew it. Oh my gosh. That's sorry. We could talk about this because this is a basketball podcast. Oh my gosh. Thank you for actually noticing the Woj bomb. I had my phone on Do Not Disturb. And my goodness, good for the Mavericks. This just is
first class organization.
Who they said they are hiring a new, they didn't even mention the GM. Who is the new GM? Is it Harlebob?
Oh my god, what a, oh man,
that's funny. That's really funny. Kane, I'm sure you absolutely love Jason Kidd.
Yeah, no.
Oh my god.
Anyways, sorry, you're talking about Rokas, and that's a player that I've seen a lot of draft Twitter pretty high on. Where do you feel like his strengths lie, and do you feel like he needs a couple of years before he can come over to the States and contribute to a team?
So as a playmaker, he's great at the pick and roll. He's a good pull-up shooter, especially from mid-range. As a passer, he is amazing. I first got to see him a few years ago at the under-19s in person. He was playing against the American team there. Like, they had a loaded team, Cade Cunningham, like basically the top four picks, Kara, Halliburton, everyone. And Rokas looked like one of the better prospects there. So right now there's rumors of him going, I don't know if it's confirmed, but there's rumors of him going to Barcelona from his team in Lithuania. So Barcelona are a top team in Europe. So if you do draft him, then you know that he will be safe in Barcelona. So I'm pretty sure he's gonna be playing a similar role to Leandro Balmaro, who got drafted last year. He'll be coming to the States. And
how is Balmaro doing? Have you kept up with him? Any he was one of my favorites in the draft last year. You know how he's doing?
Yeah, he's doing well. He'll be over next year.
Has he figured out a shot?
Not really, no.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Are there other international players? So, like, one in the first round I really have my eyes on is Usman Garuba, who I think is all with Real Madrid, if I am not mistaken. And then that's the one I have my eyes on, obviously, in the first round. I don't know if he's worth trading back to or not, in your opinion. And then are there others, like, I guess, in the second round that you can see maybe going the stash route, that, you know, teams might be overlooking? So maybe, you know, I think there's a few centers, but yeah, I'm gonna let you talk about that.
Yeah, Gruber, yeah, he's with Real Madrid. He's been with them for ages, playing in their first team for a couple of years now. At a young age, he's really impressive over there in Europe. He's one of the better defenders in the class as a help defender and a rim protector. He is a bit undersized to be a true center. He's a bit undersized to be a true center, but defensively he'll make all the right rotations, and then offensively that's where the real questions come in. He's shown to be more willing as a shooter this year, but yeah, there's not a real whole lot that he does on offense. He's going to have to shoot to be valuable. As far as trading down, if he is available like towards the 20s, I'd be more than happy to draft Gruber around there. And then some guys in the second round, international guys, another draft Twitter favorite, Vrenz Blindberg, 6'10 playmaker, kind of a dribble pass shoot guy. At 6'10, he shoots a really funny. It's basically like a young, like high school LaMelo Ball that he shoots it like, which is really funny from a 6'10 guy. But he's really good.
I've seen a lot of draft Twitter talk about Vrenz. Do you feel like he's going to be someone that's, you know, more of the stash route, or teams are going to be able to kind of get him in their system, even if they have to, you know, bring him down to the G League a couple times or whatnot? Where do you feel like his readiness is at?
You probably want to bring him over just to get him into an NBA weight room. You probably will have to leave him in the G League for a while. He's super skinny at 6'10". And, but yeah, the upside with him is pretty crazy. So yeah, you want to bring him over, hopefully keep him in G League.
The last international prospect I wanted to ask you about, and this is one of my favorite prospects in the whole NBA, in the whole draft, that's Alperen Sengun. And, I know, you know, I've seen mixed reviews. I've seen him as, you know, low as like 28 on people's boards. I've seen him as high as like 7 on people's boards. For me, he's closer to 7 than he is to 28. I think the skill level there is absolutely high. I know that you're not like the biggest on him, but where do you feel, you know, his bread and butter is going to be in the NBA? He is one of the youngest prospects. You know, I think he's 18, and his production is in the Turkish league is held up really well relative to other European bigs who've been successful in the NBA. But where are you at on him? And again, is this a situation? Because I look at some players that I'm personally high on, right? So if the Pelicans, for example, at 10 can trade back for 16 and 18 with OKC, and those are the two, I guess, draft slots, you know, would that be a situation you'd be comfortable, like, you know, taking a guy like, I don't know, like Kispert and then Garuba, or like Kispert and Sengun, or something, you know, like some combination of those players that you may not necessarily take 10, but, you know, now you get two bites at the apple over there.
Yeah, I like that idea. Trading back 16, 18, I think would be great value from the 10 pick. You can probably go get your guy that you like and then go a bit riskier with the other one. Yeah, so I do like that. I could get two bites at it. And then Sengun, so I'm not the highest on him because I don't really know what he does in the NBA. I mean, he is incredibly skilled. He's a dominant post player in Turkey. He was the MVP there as an 18-year-old, put up crazy numbers. The production is, like, for an 18-year-old, is there's no one really does it in Turkey, at least. But yeah, so he's a post player. He's a great passer out of the post. He's shown some flashes of attacking closeouts, going step back three. He shot one of them in a Euro qualifier. And then the thing I really, really want to see him at the NBA level do is to basically use as a dribble handoff hub, get him faking dribble handoffs, going downhill. He's a great decision maker. I know there's a lot of concerns about his athleticism, but something he does really well is he'll be going at full speed and all of a sudden he'll just stop, like just avoid charges. So yeah, getting going downhill, making decisions. Defensively is where the questions are going to be. He knows what to do most of the time when on island. He'll send it like the opposing player the way he wants. He's very good at that, but he does struggle with flipping his hips. So if you get a point guard out there attacking his lead leg, he'll get crossed over. It's going to happen. But yeah, if he can hold up defensively, he'll be really interesting on the offensive end where he develops into.
I think that the expertise that you call out there is great. You know, talking about footwork and things, little things that you know, we may not even notice watching a game as casual fans, but it's little things like that can make you good or good or bad defender. So I think one topic we wanted to hit on before we wrap this up, apart from the draft, was the Pelicans' late season edition of Didi. So as someone who got a chance to really watch him in person, watch him locally, I mean, anything. I know you've kind of shared your thoughts, previously in written form, but anything you got for the fans to really talk about what he's going to bring to the team, what you think his potential is, from what you've seen?
Yeah, I love Didi. Just the defensive intensity, it's really fun. He'll just chase guys over top of screens. He just does not get screened. It's super fun to watch. He needs to get better offensively, but down the line, you're looking at a guy you can probably put on as like a ball stopper type, just trailing guys over screen, just trying to make it harder for offensive players. I don't know where you work out to be. It's kind of interesting. I thought with the Pelicans only signing him to like a 1-year deal for next year, basically. I don't know what your guys' thoughts on that is, but
I do have thoughts on that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, as a 3-and-D guy, I mean, I'm sure it can be a rotation player if he develops the 3-ball.
Yeah, so I think with the 1-year deal, they're going to be able to re-sign him fairly quickly. I think they didn't get bird rights on him. I don't think they care for the bird rights because they know in all likelihood his salary is not going to be, exceeding the league average, which is around like 10 millions or so or whatever, which is what's going to come with the non-bird. I think his contract, it's either they just take the hit on the option this summer and then, use the MLE to get a new deal done, or use non-bird to get a new deal done, because he did have years of service at the end of the year, he played a couple games, or, they just keep him at his current rate and then they work a new contract out. But either way, I mean, I think he's going to be around as long as they want him around. And if they don't want him around, then, he probably wasn't good enough to make it. Maybe he ends up being good enough, but that's what it is. But, we love Didi on the podcast, but I want to ask a couple fun questions for you. One, with everything swirling around, what would be your reaction if Damian Lillard requested a trade and the Pelicans were able to pull that off?
I'd be very, very excited. What's it take to get in there?
Let's say it takes Ingram and a few picks, whatever. Let's just say the Pelicans are able to beat everyone's offer because Ingram is the trump card and, they have the draft capital necessary, but they're able to, they have 11 first round picks in the next 7 years. Let's say they're able to hold on to like at least 7 or 8 of those.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Cool. I mean, do you have any specific thoughts on what the Lillard-Zion pairing would look like in your mind?
I don't really know how you got that. You get Lillard as the ball handler, Zion center screen, like on the logo. I mean, what do you do there? Just space the floor? I mean, yeah.
So the complete opposite of that question is, what would be your reaction if the Pelicans went into next year and, Lonzo Ball is their starting point guard and then Nikhil is their starting two guard and then Jackson is their starting center and effectively that's their starting lineup with Ingram and Zion and there's no, major acquisition made?
I'll be slightly disappointed, probably more than slightly. I do like the young guys, but I mean, we have to do something if we want to keep Zion. Really, that's just how it is.
Are you personally concerned with the reports that came out around Zion? And if you were in a decision-making role, would you do moves that appease him, or would you just be like, whatever, I'm trying to build the best team possible?
That's something I've actually thought about a fair bit. So as far as winning goes, how good does the team have to be considered a winning team, like if you believe the reports?
Great question.
I don't really know how to answer that.
I don't know if anyone does. It seems like a intentionally vague term, right? So it gives you an out no matter what. Let's say you win in the first round. Is that good enough? Or did you lose in the first round? Is that good enough? And is that going to be one of the situations where you could be like, yeah, man, it was totally good. All those other news are, the news that came out last year was completely bullshit. You like deny, deny, deny. Or, if depending on how things went, you're like, actually, it's not good enough. I want blah, 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 or I won't sign. I don't know. It just seems intentionally vague for that reason. It lets you wiggle out of anything. At least that's my read of anything.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's tough. And I feel like this season more than anything has made that even tougher. I mean, like you look at the teams in the playoffs right now in the conference finals, and there are teams with a bunch of young players like Booker and Trae Young and DeAndre Ayton. I mean, all these guys. And so if you're sitting there as Zion, I mean, even guys like Luka, you're sitting there and looking at this and saying, why shouldn't this be me? And so who knows what winning means? It's like you said, it's intentionally vague, but the more that the league kind of opens up and stops becoming the same two teams or three teams in there every year, the more players will want to get their way in there and play deep in the playoffs. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I think we're headed to a pretty interesting time of star empowerment. I mean, it's kind of been trending ever since, I don't know, for a long time, actually. I can't pinpoint when it really culminated, but I think what's happening is you're seeing timelines shorten, kind of what we started off at talking about in the beginning. And even the loyalty of guys such as Damian Lillard is being tested. I think what happens in their coaching search is probably going to inform what he's going to do next, which is very interesting to watch play out, because publicly it's been reported that their owner wants Becky Hammond, and then he's kind of indicated he likes Chauncey Billups. So who wins that? I mean, the owner at the end of the day is the key decision maker, but as an owner, as a billionaire, are you so stubborn to piss off your star? I don't know. You do have the most amount of money. Like, you know, the Allens are filthy rich. They're some of like the wealthiest family in one of the wealthiest families in the world. So maybe she feels like she doesn't have to answer to someone who is worth even a fraction of her net worth, and she doesn't care. It's her little, you know, project. She can do what she wants. Or maybe she's just really passionate about it and not having Chauncey Billups in the building, because he comes with some baggage as well, to put it lightly. I don't know. And as much as I root for chaos with other teams, I can't help but wonder if me rooting for chaos is me inadvertently rooting for Zion to pull the same stuff, because one, I think the more stars that do this, other stars would feel emboldened and empowered, perhaps even to team up. And two, what I'm interested in is if that were to happen, let's say Donovan Mitchell is unhappy. Let's say Karl Towns has been there for a while, so I think he has his legitimate reasons. But, you know, Donovan Mitchell just signed his extension. Let's say he's unhappy. Luka is about to sign his extension, hasn't signed it yet. He is unhappy. You know, let's say these guys, you know, take the money, and then, you know, year one in their extension, they're asking out. Where does that leave the ownership landscape? I feel like that's going to lead to pretty big lockouts. And if those guys are going to pull moves like that, I feel like just because everything goes wrong for the Pelicans, Zion's going to look at that and be like, hey, I can do that too. So ultimately, while like me rooting for chaos, I feel like it's an own goal almost, because Zion's on this team and he's probably like watching how the league shapes itself out. But I feel like if enough of these people do it, ownerships, when the CBA is next being negotiated, I think in a couple of years, there's going to be a lockout, and it's not going to be good for the players, I don't think. And what ends up happening is that it's the stars are never the players that really feel the brunt of the negotiations. It's the middle class players and the bottom, you know, like the minimum level players. But I don't know. I mean, I've rambled a little bit. Do you have any thoughts on that, Kane? Because I feel like, you know, this is a good way to go full circle on this podcast and bring the topic back to what it was in the beginning.
Not really. Honestly, I don't really know too much about the lockouts and that. Like, I can't really comment on that. I'm sorry.
No, that's no problem at all. But do you feel, I guess, not specifically about the lockouts, but do you wonder if more and more stars do this, like, is there a part of you that wonders if Zion is about to do the same thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I forget who's always saying it, but I'm pretty sure it's one of the Bourbon Street Shots guys. They're saying they're just waiting for the first guy to sign a one-year deal off their rookie contract. Like, someone's going to do it at some stage. It's going to start a trend where guys will get out of bad situations.
Yeah. Mason, do you have any final thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's I feel you on the fact that you don't want to root for something that could end up happening to you. I feel like it happens a lot. I feel like Pelicans fans in general have gotten better about like rooting for chaos in other small markets, and like are just like, drama's fun in the NBA. Like, the news cycle comes when games aren't being played, but at the same time, I think we've come to realize that if it's happening to another small market team, it's kind of like it's happening to you, and you want to be like, almost want to be respectful of that, because you're all dealing with the same shit. So I do think, you know, I'm not rooting for like bad things to happen to Portland necessarily, but you know, at this point, you got to look out for yourselves and whatever's best for the Pelicans at this point, beyond hiring a guy like Jason Kidd, whatever's best to keep Zion, keep him happy, keep him in New Orleans is kind of what I'm pulling for. So, that's where I'm at.
Yeah. There's very much an element of, man, look, I can't control what I can't control. So can't spend time worrying about, you know, those type of things. But I can, I can try to enjoy the moment. And right now the moment is chaos. And so that's kind of what's going on. You know, we're watching the Dallas Mavericks hire Jason. Well, they haven't officially hired him. They're closing in on hiring Jason Kidd and a new GM who is yet to be named. And I just find it hilarious that they keep on referring to this guy as an unnamed GM, which I think it's going to be Utah's Dennis Lindsay, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Interesting.
Yeah. Fun stuff. Kane, I appreciate you waking up early and talking to us about the draft. I think your insight's invaluable. I think more people need to follow you. Actually, why don't you tell us your where to find you?
Twitter @Kane_Purnell.
Yep. And we're going to blast the social out as well when we publish the podcast. We'll probably have Kane on a few more times, especially if the Pelicans make some interesting moves in the draft or post-draft, if they actually end up with the rookie to discuss this. And Kane, once again, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate you coming on here and educating us on all aspects of this draft.
Thanks for having me on, guys.